Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Again, now to Circles of Change, our second segment. And, you know, Mark Sandler couldn't have set us up any better, talking about being thankful for what could happen, listening in the silence, and as you're going to hear from our next guest, learning through recovery. So with that, Dr. Jody Urey from San Francisco, welcome to the show, Jody.
Hi, how are you today?
We're doing great. Well, let me give a brief introduction before Jody and I get talking together. She believes recovery from some of life's most difficult situations is a process of learning. Jody earned her doctorate in family psychology following a master's in vocational rehabilitation counseling with a focus on alcoholism. A native of Kentucky, her early career experiences spanned alcoholism outreach and outpatient therapy, affiliated with various organizations in Florida, Illinois, and California. And with her first love having been music, of which she studied in undergraduate school, Jody wrote and performed a collection of songs from the CD called Fast Horses and Beautiful Women, poems put to music in response to the things people she had worked with as a therapist said about their sorrowful situations, as well as the addition of some of her own life experiences. Jody thus pioneered talk therapy, reading about issues and listening to music at the same time. In private practice now for 20 years as a psychotherapist based in San Francisco, Jody also lectures and has been on TV and radio. She specializes in the treatment of fear, both recognizing and regulating it to be calm. And as an expert in recovery from trauma, incest, abuse, impulse disorders, and other addictions, it is Jody's life work to serve as a guide to help people walk out of darkness toward the light, and she rejoices, frankly, in the amazing strength and capacity of the human spirit to heal. Well, with that introduction, I can't think of a better time of year as well, Jody, to give you the chance to join us here on the show. So again, welcome.
Thank you.
Well,
nice to be with you.
You bet. Now, you had wanted to frame up this segment as fear, the great teacher and motivator. What do you mean by that?
Well, in general, all of us have fear. The only way you could not have fears to be dead. It's a natural instinctual response to just perception of threat, which happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And it allows us to have the opportunity, if we're aware of what's going on in our mind and our body, to make decisions that can move us in the right direction. And overriding that instinctual response oftentimes is what causes us a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, the fact of the matter is that you've worked with people for a long time now who indeed have had, you know, real fears, not just perceived fears, right?
Well, it's interesting. Fear is just a signal. It's just physiological. Mm. So I don't even look at it as whether or not it is real, but more how do you even know you're having it? For instance, if in fact you have a memory of something that was indeed scary, maybe it was an injury you had playing sports when you were a little kid, you could actually be out watching your child playing sports and have an acute sense of awareness of perception of threat, but not based on what's happening necessarily with your child.
Good.
But something that is being stimulated by memory, something we've learned, and therefore we develop the habit. And once you become aware, it's your child there with T-ball, the little ball sitting on the stand, really isn't that much perception of threat because they're only 7 years old. But if you have that in your history, then it can be something that's not based on the moment. It's really going to be based on memory. And that's a lot of what recovery is about from trauma.
And so the different type of traumas you've worked with, I know you've done work with post-traumatic stress disorders, right?
Well, it's interesting. Because I specialize in the field of addiction, one of the things that happens with families that are in chaos, which addicted families are going to be in chaos, is children are not involved in an environment of safety. Mm-hmm. And when a child doesn't feel safe and there's not a predictable sequence of events that's going to happen in the family order, their little systems just go on alert. And the longer that system of perception threat goes on alert for the child, the more they develop learning and habits around that. And then the behaviors sometimes really just don't work for them as they move into adult life, wanting to have relationships, wanting to be intimate. because that perception of threat can come from something that's not happening now, but something that was based in something that did actually happen a long time ago. So it's complicated. It's a very complicated problem. I don't even like the word disorder, quite frankly. I should weigh in on this. I think we pathologized far too many things these days, because children have these experiences. So isn't it a disorder that they learn how to accommodate and adapt in a family where they have an abnormal amount of fear? Or is that something that they do because they need to survive? And if they hadn't have done it, they might have actually ended up, you know, being less successful. So I tend to move away from pathologizing, and it, for instance, all the anxiety disorders.
We're just
going
to say that's the one is the term
oh,
of the year
goodness.
Now is anxiety, and also then all the pharmacological solutions from the drug companies and these commercials on television that show the butterflies flitting across, and you too can have.
Well, and if you think about it, and by the way, I should mention the Diagnostic Statistical Manual 5 is going to be coming out, and who knows what they'll have added to the list of anxiety in quotes disorders. So anxiety is just a state of fear. And the longer we stay in fear, so there's fear that happens, and we should have fear in that moment because a car just swerves in front of us.
Right.
And we need to take aversive action to avoid some type of collision. However, if that reminds us of three other car wrecks we were involved in, and then we end up thinking about it all day long because our systems are on alert, then the body starts to produce a lot more chemicals that actually put us into more of a chronic stress state. So it's complicated, but is that abnormal? Or is that something that we could look at and we could say, oh my goodness, look at how aroused I am. Mm-hmm. This is not even happening right now, but it does bring up, it allows me to digest memories from other times and have a different experience in the now.
And in fact, you're almost welcoming these old friends back because you've seen that pattern in your own behavior. And so now how do I kind of keep that friend seated over to the right, not up in front of me?
Well, as my co-author, you know, I'm writing this book on fear, stress, and pain. My co-author, Mary Dahlman, who's a professor at University of California, San Francisco, she says part of life is learning how to drive in the left lane. And that's another way of saying that if we can realize, whoa, we're way over here driving on the access road, we need to get back over here in the left lane, nothing is happening in the moment, then we develop mindfulness training, cardio, whatever it is we choose to do to create a sense of awareness in the moment and regulate our bodies so we don't stay in these constant states of stress.
Right. Exactly.
But is that pathology, you see? I mean, it's interesting. Is everything pathology? Is everything a disorder? I don't think so. Life is stressful. Life happens.
Yeah, that's right. It's the process. Well, Judy, if I could shift here, I mentioned in the introduction, of course, is not only your love and passion for working with people to find the light and deal with their own challenges, but along that way, the musical side of your life came forward and you did a CD that really is part and parcel of how you work with individuals. So tell us about your music background and then also the creation of the CD, and I'd like to play a couple clips when we get a chance here.
I always did music, so whether it was singing in the choir or performing classical music as a child, I just loved music. It was a refuge for me. It's interesting. My mother's from the bluegrass. My father was from Appalachia. So there was this odd sort of combination of circumstances. But my favorite music is anything toe-tapping. I just love. It's really called Americana music when it went to Nashville. That's the label that they put on it. But I would sit with people, and they, you know, people say funny things, not funny in the odd things. So, for instance, somebody might say, you know, I fell in love with every man I ever saw. And so that became a tender fatal flaw, which is one of the songs. And I would hear binging on men, ice cream, and booze. I would have all these people that, you know, had different binging disorders. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's a good tune. And I would say, excuse me, that's my clinical note for the day. I would write it down. And then for me, those kinds of songs just come in. They pop in. And then I worked with producer Danny Hines, we just had an amazing experience, and I was fortunate to have, there are a lot of great musicians who play on that CD, including Grammy winners. So
that's great. Well, let's take a chance. I'd like to actually play the opening cut, the title from which the CD is named, Fast Horses and Beautiful Women. And, of course, that title comes from, you know, the moniker down in Kentucky, right?
That's what Kentucky's known for, fast horses and beautiful women.
Yes, including Jody Urie. So let's play that tune if we could bring that. Here we go. So, Judy, was that one of the first songs that came to mind as you even thought about this idea of doing an album?
No, it was. It wasn't that one. That one came about a little bit later on. But really what that's about, now Kentucky's not about this, but that's what the song is about, yeah. And it's Fast Horses. So it's gambling and beautiful women, which is sex addiction, because I treat a lot of people who have, they get themselves in jams. They just don't stop to think, and they make bad choices in relationships. And, of course, it's an impulse disorder, sexual addiction. So it came more from sex and gambling, because I treat those kinds of impulse disorders. So it was kind of a cute way to talk about a dark subject.
A dark subject, yeah. Now, if I recall our conversation, that you still have the family farm, don't you?
We do. Anybody want to buy an old farm? give me a call. We do. We have this farm. It's been around since the 1800s, and we used to grow tobacco like everybody else did around there. And it's another part of the world that most people who know me out here in California just don't, they don't know when I bring this out. They say, why are you talking like that? Well, it's my first language, so people don't think about that. So.
And in fact, I'm even hearing, you're having listened to your music just now, that I hear your Kentucky drawl really strongly.
It's there.
It's there.
It's there. We can bring it out, but I don't know everybody wants to hear it.
So you also know how to pull it back down, right?
When the language. People don't appreciate that. When I moved to Chicago, I was teased so much about how I talked. I would talk into a recorder so I could change my accent.
Okay. Well, the fact that you transitioned then from having studied music and the humanities as an undergraduate, did you always know you wanted to really parlay into helping others in the vocational rehabilitation sector?
Well, I was a shut-in visitor, and I don't know if you know that expression.
No, I don't. What does that mean?
Well, in Kentucky, we would go out and visit the shut-ins.
Okay.
And I generally knew the shut-ins who always had good baked goods. So you'd go, you know, people who can't get out,
yeah.
Elders, people who were ill. And I grew up in a little town with two stoplights, so it was a very small community. And we would, you know, different of people would go around and visit. And so from that, I always help people. It was just kind of natural to me to offer compassion, and being naturally therapeutic came easily for me.
Now, your focus on alcoholism, though, if I recall, you know, Kentucky is, you know, a pretty dry state, isn't it?
Well, my family didn't quite understand that. I never saw alcohol served in my childhood, so they got a little bit upset with that particular direction. But to me, it just felt like anything else where people were using a substance to sedate. So it was a natural transition. And the other thing, because I studied during the Vietnam War. That's when I went into rehabilitation. And unlike a lot of physical injuries, paraplegia and quadriplegia, alcoholism is very treatable. And I like that about it. Mm-hmm. I like that with the right sort of coaching effort and direction and support, because remember, with any kind of addiction, it's how do we change the habit, how do we change the behavior, and that's not so easy. It requires an enormous amount of effort to help people do something else when they're in a lot of pain to move towards pleasure besides, in this situation, drinking.
And so as you work with your clients through the process of their letting go or moving towards new things, is it a process that, you know, involves multiple months, years, going back in circles? How do you find that, the approach you use with your clients, Judy?
Well, for me, I think recovery is a lifetime for all of us anyway. So it's never over in the sense of, I find people always interested in expanding. So you can start with, you have to get basic education with something like alcoholism, other addictions. There's this educational focus. And then there's the support. 12-step programs have been studied. They're equally as good as any psychotherapy. But then you combine the two. And what you get is an enormous structure that a person has to move into going into a different direction in life. And then the mindful-based treatments, that's being combined now into therapy. And it's actually something that, like they have MBCBT, which is mindfully based cognitive behavioral therapy.
Okay,
but the truth is, it's all about learning to stay present so you can make the decision in a moment to notice what's going on, so that then you can make another decision that isn't going back to the old habit. And without continuous effort, I mean, the reason in AA they say go to 90 meetings in 90 days is that really is behavioral therapy.
You bet.
If you do that every day for 90 days, chances are really good you can develop a new neural pathway, neuroplasticity, and you'll have the opportunity to make another decision. So all of these things, what I try to do is get people, I mean, my co-author's a neurophysiologist, and of course I come from this world of psychology, and just even to develop a language in common, she and I have sat around a kitchen table for 3 years fussing at each other. But I think more of us professionally need to be able to come to the table to realize we're all talking about the same thing.
You bet.
Yeah. In a different language.
That's very simple.
So, and that's, you know, that's very important to me.
That's very good. Let's play a second clip and then we continue on. I'd like you to play the song Hope Was There. So if we bring that one up, listen to it. Story behind that one, Jody?
Well, I find most of the people I work with are extremely isolated, and the loneliness and the sorrow and desperation of the darkness of the heart when you're all by yourself. So one of the things that gives all of us hope is having some way of finding other people who can share that experience and encourage us. So I happen, because I work with very difficult situations, for instance, incest, that's one of the hardest that there is. However, it doesn't mean that a person can't recover and have a different experience of life, but it takes a lot of support and it takes a lot of hope that things can be different. And in many ways, I'm a coach, just like you are.
Exactly.
It's a lot of coaching. You can do this. Here's how it's going to look. And I find that that's something I wanted to think about, which is hope. I mean, because that's what, actually it's been 40 years that I've been in the business. So I feel like offering hope is one of the main things that I do.
And the idea that, you know, this coupling, reading about issues and listening to music at the same time, I can imagine that that is a very different place for your clients to enjoy this coming from the inside out then.
Well, it was an idea I had. I don't know how much people have actually done it when I put that website up initially, but the idea of music being music therapy, of course, we all know music is very, Oliver Sacks just had a show the other day on one of the NPR stations about the use of music in different kinds of healing, rehabilitation. So music in and of itself is extremely important in terms of allowing the body to have a different experience. But then also combining maybe a little humor, maybe a little beat, even if you don't listen to the words, it has a little tempo to it. And it's something that, you know, growing up in the mountains in Kentucky, people get together and they play music. They just come over. It's not about anything. You sit in, you sit out, you tap your feet, whatever it is that you want to do, clap your hands. And it's fun. So that's the other thing about music to me. It's just fun.
Exactly. Let's play one more final segment, and then we'll wrap up. And this tune coming up now is called How Empty of Me. Again, we're speaking with Dr. Jody Yeary, who is a psychotherapist based in San Francisco, and her CD is called Fast Horses and Beautiful Women. Let's play that final segment.
The night.
Oh, Jody, the music that was on that one, I think the tune and the lyrics are pretty obvious. Your role in music, was it indeed the lyrics and the vocals as well as some of the music, the background, the guitar?
Yes, I play rhythm on all of the songs. So, yes, I'm on all those songs. I sing and I wrote all the music on the CD except for one, which was a poem written by Jan Mirkatani, who was on abuse. Mm-hmm. So, and that song, actually, so the expression, "How empty of me to be so full of you," is a 12-step expression. Mm-hmm. You know, they have all these expressions, but it's really about codependency, or I like to use the word overly sympathetic. It's, mm-hmm. There's nothing there inside of you except that other person. And so it was written in response to, I treat a lot of people who get involved in situations where they're not taking care of themselves, they're taking care of the other person.
Yeah, oh, interesting. Well, Jody, this idea that fear is a signal, it's a great teacher and a motivator. Can't thank you enough for joining us here today. And individuals interested, how could they get a hold of you then to talk further?
You can go to my email, which is drjody@drjody.com, or I have a website, drjody.com, and I'm in San Francisco, so if you're ever in San Francisco, just give a call. I'm listed under businesses. So
that's great. That's area code 415-566-1564. With that, thanks a lot. You have a wonderful holiday and really appreciate your contribution.
Thank you so much.
Take great. Have a great balance of the day.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.